It's taken 25 years, but www.chrisrodell.com is finally becoming more like Chris Rodell. What could possibly go wrong? But I hope you'll check it out. Hi, I'm Chris Rodell, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 7 of Use All the Crayons, the podcast that tells you how we're always keeping it colorful right here in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, the vibrant heart of the lovely Laurel Highlands. I've, over the past 40 years, spent my days chasing more than 3,200 of the most compelling human interest stories on the planet. I guess that means I know a thing or two about what interests humans. Today we're going to be talking about California City, where the dead outnumber the living, secrets behind the amazing Kinzu Bridge, and getting tick bit in a sensitive place. And I don't mean the local funeral parlor. We've called Latrobe home for 30 years, conceived and raised two whole human beings here. We love it here so much that in 2007, I turned down a prestigious Manhattan job because we didn't want to upend our firstborn daughter's life. She had her tight circle of friends, her routines. We didn't want to put her through the turmoil. Was it her senior year? No, she was a kindergartner. But that's just how we roll. The prestigious job offer I rejected? Senior editor at Glamour magazine. Senior editor Glamour. Latrobe, so special it's like make-believe. So real it's really special. Believe it. Is anyone listening right now singing a Saskatoon? Saskatoon is a city of about 350,000, nearly 800 miles north of the U.S.-Canadian border. It is the largest city in the province of Saskatchewan. Oddly enough, it is home to the fourth most listeners to this podcast. Somehow it's true. My stats page says listeners from Saskatoon are behind Pittsburgh, Ross Township, and Latrobe in regards to listener abundance. I welcome listeners of all faiths, races, etc. Of course, I'm not going to draw a line and put the good people of Saskatoon on one side and me on the other. All are welcome. My question, why are they welcoming me? I've never been there, have no kin nor correspondence there. In fact, my sole knowledge of the town is about the song that is on the Slapshot soundtrack. It's a 1975 Sonny James song, A Little Bit South of Saskatoon. Oh, Saskatoon, what gives? If I find out, I'll be sure to let you all know. Senior Editor Glamour. Senior Editor Glamour. Three words I never thought would apply to me. The Colma, California town motto, "It's great to be alive in Colma," has a cryptic meaning to those who are familiar with grave undertakings. In Colma, the dead outnumber the living nearly 1,000 to 1. With just about 1,000 mortal beings, the equation makes for a rockin' town for tombstone tourists. We have 17 cemeteries, one exclusively for beloved pets, says Mayor Helen Fiscaro. The cemeteries are all like our parks. They are absolutely beautiful and people come from all over to enjoy them. Colma is the final resting place for more than 1.5 million deceased. She said the dead provide a living for numerous florists, landscapers, monument erectors, and other businesses associated with the always thriving death industry. Death became a growth industry in Colma nearly 100 years ago when neighboring San Francisco deemed its real estate too precious to squander on the dearly departed, according to Pat Hatfield, since 1993 president of the Colma Historical Society. Suddenly, the final resting places became transitory. All the cemeteries were evicted, she said. The graves needed to be moved outside of the city limits. Okay, but why Colma? It was convenient, she said. Colma was as close to funeral homes could get and still be able to take back there in one day. The hectic and trying relocation process resulted in what today is a community of uncommon peacefulness. The cemeteries are so beautiful, and we all have their own personalities, Hatfield said, adding that the cemeteries were characteristics as diverse as San Francisco itself. Many cemeteries are like ethnic neighborhoods without the restaurants. There's Serbian, Japanese, Italian, Greek, Chinese, and Jewish cemeteries. Most popular is the Pets Rest Cemetery, home to the graves and lovingly rendered monuments to more than 13,000 dogs, cats, ocelots, goldfish, monkeys, turtles, and cheetahs even, says owner Philip Baca. People are really moved by what they see here, Baca said. They realize there are certain things everyone has had to do when any human dies, but the love people show a pet is really above and beyond. Many famous Californians born elsewhere live in perpetuity in Colma. Baseball legend Joe DiMaggio, jazz musician Peanuts theme composer Vince Guaraldi, and Manson murder victim and coffee heiress Abigail Folger are among the eternal residents of the Holy Cross Cemetery. William Randolph Hearst is at Cypress Lawn. Wyatt Earp, a man who became famous in Tombstone, has his tombstone in the hills of Eternity Memorial Park, as does blue jeans icon Levi Strauss. Mark Fontana is a Colma chiseler in the best sense of the word. His grandfather, Valero Fontana, founded in 1921 the family Mason business, now going four generations strong. He says he's built mausoleums worth $500,000 and says the average amount spent on a monument is between $2,000 and $5,000. He hastens to add the numbers diminish the personal investment unseen in the work contracts. "We don't advertise, and in Colma, we're always busy," he says. "This is one of those businesses where people pay us, and then they send us thank you notes. It's very gratifying." Senior Editor Glamour. The calendar year is getting old when the leaves begin to fall, but that doesn't mean you have to. Every year, rake the leaves into a big pile in the backyard and dive in like an Olympic gold medalist. The soul-refreshing fun will stiffen your spine for any bitter winter. Jumping in a big pile of leaves remains one of my favorite fall activities. Alas, justified fear of ticks has scuttled the fun. Here's my tick horror story. I woke up feeling morose yesterday. I felt lost. I felt helpless. I felt forlorn. I knew it wouldn't last. I knew things were bound to change. Sure enough, they did. They got much, much worse. What happened? I felt my balls. I noticed an irritation and detected what felt like a nubby pencil eraser attached to the skin. With trembling dread, I crab-walked to the bathroom, turned on the light, and began a gentle inspection. A tick was sucking on my right nut. The nerve. We'd not even been introduced. By the size of it, the tick had been there since, 1972. The sucker was huge. It was engorged like it had been given a seat in an all-you-can-eat binge, a regular buffet. We live in the woods. Our stupid dog gets one or two tick bites every year, and Val and the kids have both had their brushes with the nasty little buggers. But their ticks have had the decency to bite them in places relatively free of pain and embarrassment. Mine sought to inflict maximum pain, fear, and humiliation, like an attack planned by Tick General Patton. I couldn't believe it had undetected surpassed all my sartorial defenses to make it clear to my testicles, and ticks probably win some kind of bonus points if they make it to one part of the human male body that includes a syllable with a slang alternative that sounds like tick. Understand, I've not been roaming naked through the woods. I've been fully clothed from head to toe since at least fall. So this tick, about the size of a pepper seed, somehow climbed up my shoe, over my sock, up my calf, through my forest of leg hair, evaded the hem of my boxer shorts, and found the most sensitive part of me before deciding to feast. Chomp. If I'd have known even one girl at Ohio University with that kind of precise persistence, I never would have graduated. I summoned Val to the bathroom with a voice that always leads her to believe I'm either about to ask her for a lot of money or confess to one small sin in hopes it'll conceal a much larger one. I asked her to gaze at my groin. She knew by my demeanor this was not an invitation to foreplay. Wow, a tick, and it's a big one. You can now appreciate the integrity of my storytelling because I didn't edit her comment to read, "Wow, it's a big one," before getting to the part about the tick. She told me her experience taught her the best way to remove a tick that was embedded, as mine was to make it dizzy, to rub it in a circular way with my finger. That'll loosen its grip because then it'll have to withdraw. Then you can use the tweezers to remove it. You do not want to pinch it off so the head stays in your body. That could lead to Lyme disease. As you may know, Lyme disease leaves victims chronically fatigued and is not to be confused with lemon Lyme disease, which leaves victims chronically fatigued sourpusses. She left me alone, and for the first time in my life, I began to ponder the best way to make a tick dizzy. Sure, I could rub it with my finger, or I could get creative. I could dance, shake my hips, maybe do some calisthenics. I decided to use the recommended finger method when I realized the other options were likely to make me dizzy and I'd soon be pinching tweezers up on my scrotum. Well, the operation was a painful failure. I was unable to extract the tick head. Val said to call the doctor. The doctor said to come over ASAP. I was there in an hour. Every alien itch had me feeling like charbroiling my groin with a flamethrower. I fear I'm about to endure a painful episode, one that's sure to involve embarrassment. Wish me luck. And that's the TikTok on today's TikTok. Mourn not the culprit of this pain and embarrassment. Sure, the instigator is dead, beheaded by tweezers. But how many ticks do you know that died having a real ball? The tick story generated for me an unprecedented surge in reader support, 2 Facebook thumbs up, from those concerned about me being bitten in what I'll euphemistically call a sensitive place. And by sensitive place, I do not mean the part of my brain that triggers weeping during movies where the dog dies. I went to the doctor. He examined my sensitive place, as did his young female assistant. He said I was fine, no pills, no pain, no threat of Lyme disease. So let me post a handy guide in case you're ever bitten in a sensitive place. Note these tips only apply to ticks. If you're bitten in your sensitive place by anything larger than a tick, I'd suggest you contact either the police or maybe a marriage counselor. Remove the tick with tweezers. As noted, I took my wife's advice to try and make the tick dizzy. This was foolish. Dizzy ticks don't remove more easily than clear-minded ticks. Save the tick. It can be helpful in diagnosing potential harms. The doctor said mine was either a deer tick or a Texas tick. Since I had it attached to my sensitive place, I'm referring to it as the dreaded dick tick. Wash the bite area with warm water. Because the water runs right off my sensitive place, just how to effectively do this puzzled me. I decided the best thing to do was take the mug I use for my morning tea, fill it with warm water, stand in the shower, and plunge my sensitive place right into the mug. I did this multiple times and am now considering making it part of my morning routine. Take the tick seriously. I probably wouldn't have gone to the doctor without Val's urging. I'm glad I did. I'm now more aware of the dangers and prevalence of tick disease. It's highly debilitating, deadly even. Lastly, be sure you thoroughly wash and dry your morning mug after immersing your sensitive place inside it. Took me about 4 sips before I realized why the morning tea was tasting so extra morning spicy. This is a story about the 123-year-old bridge in Kinzu State Park in north central Pennsylvania. It was once considered the 8th wonder of the world. It was toppled by a tornado in 2003. On Thursday, the state opened a spectacular new see-through skywalk on what remains of the trestle. During an interview, the PR director told me about the story of Odo Valentine, who in 1939 flew a biplane perpendicular through the 64-foot-wide center section of the span. And he never told a soul. Fearful he'd lose his pilot license, he kept the secret and an evidentiary picture to himself for nearly 70 years. A new vertigo-inducing see-through skywalk at the Kinzu Bridge State Park will remind awestruck visitors at the North Central Pennsylvania Park why the structure was once considered the 8th wonder of the world. And if they time it right, they might get to meet the man who today qualifies as a world wonder unto himself. That would be 96-year-old Odo Valentine. For some history about the structure, that's properly historic. The Kinzu Railroad Bridge was built in 1882 to speed trains loaded with coal and timber to market via the Great Lakes. At 301 feet above the valley, 24 feet higher than the Brooklyn Bridge, the bridge traversed a 2,053-foot gulf of sylvan splendor. It pulsed with commercial railroad activity 6 days a week, but on Saturdays and Sundays, it was crowded with pleasure seekers who came from all over to experience the tracks across the sky. There was no airplanes, so anyone wanted to experience what it was like to fly, they'd take a Sunday drive across Kinzu, said Linda Devlin of the Pennsylvania Visitors Bureau. It was world-renowned. It was rebuilt in 1900 by famed French railroad architect Octave Chanute. He would become better known as the Wright Brothers' tutor and was eulogized in 1910 as the father of aviation. Upon completion of the Kinzu restoration, Chanute boasted the bridge would stand 100 years. He was off by 3. A tornado blew down 11 of the 20 towers on July 21, 2003. Today, the Kinzu Skywalk perches atop 6 now repaired towers and concludes with an octagon-shaped skywalk with reinforced glass views to the valley below. And maybe the only thing more incredible than the view is the story of Mr. Valentine, a barnstorming pilot determined to make his mark. When I was a kid, I just started learning to fly. I told my dad one day I was going to fly through Kinzu Bridge. And he said, "Son, if you're going to do it, you better have someone take a picture because no one's ever going to believe it." On July 4th, 1939, he flew a propeller-driven biplane with a 32-foot wingspan perpendicular between the 64-foot center spans at 110 miles an hour. One gust, one slip, and Valentine would have been leaving a different sort of mark on Kinzu. He deliberately chose July 4th because he knew everyone would be at a nearby holiday parade. He immediately began squelching rumors of the stunt when he learned bridge owners were livid and determined to sue if he ever caught the reckless pilot, who was sure to lose his license. For 70 years, the high flyer laid low. He never told a soul. He swore the cameraman and another witness to secrecy. No one ever found out. He never lost his license and went on to be a decorated pilot trainer in World War II and the Korean War, who enjoyed friendly associations with famed aviators Eddie Rickenbacker and ballplayer ace Teddy Williams. "When the bridge came down, I thought I'd see if I could find that picture up in the attic," he said. "I was sure my wife had thrown it away." She had not. And on that Thursday, Valentine was the guest of honor at the bridge where fame's been deferred for more than 70 years. Will wonders never cease? Apparently not at Kinzu. Which is the greater cultural irony? Roger Daltrey still singing, "Hope I die before I get old," or Madonna still singing, "Like a virgin." Thanks to Robindale Energy for their gracious and essential support.
John Jamison, retired sheep farmer, Crabtree, Pennsylvania.
Colorful living tip of the day.
My colorful living tip of the day is learn the fine art of knowing precisely when to quit.
Thank you.
Yes.
Senior editor, Glamour. 3 words I never thought would apply to me.